If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
Hold it. What do you mean I can't borrow money? I have $250,000 in cash in a savings account here, and you're not going to give me $100 in a credit line? I don't understand. And it's because automatic underwriting is good news and bad news.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Over 25 years ago, Merrill Chandler, a personal and business credit pioneer and co-founder of Lexington Law Firm, became dissatisfied with the ineffective results of credit repair. Leveraging his extensive knowledge of borrower behavior profiles, FICO scoring metrics, and lender underwriting requirements, he developed a process that could optimize a consumer's borrower behavior and improve a borrower's fundability. He founded GetFundable.com to deliver this revolutionary technology to real estate investors, business owners, and entrepreneurs nationwide. Merrill has helped thousands of borrowers become more fundable and help them access the capital they need to fulfill their financial dreams. Merrill, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Sam. I'm so glad to be here.
Hey, man, the pleasure's mine. You know, this is an interesting podcast episode. You know, we talk a lot on this show to active investors. We talk to deal sponsors. We talk to passive investors. Hey, you know, the money side of things is we do talk to people on the money side, typically, though, from the lending perspective.
Right.
Now, you're going to be on the other side of the table, which is really going to tell us more of how to become more, well, you call it fundable.
Right.
So, you know, I guess the floor is yours. We kind of got a little bit of background on who you are and where you are and where you started, but really just walk us through this process and kind of what your thinking is.
Absolutely. So two things. I started out, as you said in the intro, I started out at Lexington Law. We co-founded that organization, a huge credit repair outfit. But I learned very quickly that you can't repair your way to a fundable profile. Lenders aren't going to give you money because you delete a couple of items from your credit report, right? And so all of a sudden there's this huge chasm between good credit and credit repair, but half of America doesn't have bad credit, but they're still not fundable. They don't know what lenders need them to look like in order to get that approval, right? And so that became my mission, borrower education, teaching borrowers what lenders are looking for and be able to meet those guidelines so that they get approved. And all of this came to a head in a few years ago when I went to what's called FICO World. Think of it as Mount Olympus of the credit and funding gods, right? So I'm sitting here at FICO at my dinner table, blown away by the seminar and the conferences that I've been attending. And a gentleman walks up to our table. His name is Will Lansing, the CEO of FICO, sits down and asks me tell me about your business model. I have no idea why he's talking to me. I'm no lender. I'm not the president of Chase Bank, right? Just some guy helping borrowers. Share with them that we focus on borrower education and making borrowers fundable so that they become the perfect customer for bank. And he's like, I like what I'm hearing. He sets up meetings for me to meet with the score development teams, the three-digit FICO score development teams. So I get to meet with FICO, the personal and the business score developers. And I ask 100 questions that he promised he wouldn't be able to answer all of them. But when we got down in the weeds, it was amazing. I had to sign an NDA, everything, so that I could not share some of the details, but when it comes to the education piece, everything is open season. So I've spent the last 7 years of the last 30 that I've been in this credit optimization space, focusing on business lending, business borrowing, and how to make your listeners perfect bank customers so they get approvals.
Right. And so in that, I mean, I don't care if you, what's a perfect credit score? Is that 800, 820? What is
850 or 900, depending on which version is being used.
Okay. Well, I don't have either of those. So anyway, yeah, right. But even if you do, like, even if I had a perfect credit score, I still may not be bankable or fundable, as you put it. Stick with your term, fundable.
That is correct.
Right. What are the pieces that are missing?
Right. So most people go like, well, I don't have the income or the debt to income ratio, or, but what fundable means is that most people believe that their credit score has a significant impact on your approvals. And it's just not true. It's patently not true. Your FICO score has to do with the rate and term that you get, and it has to do with how much they're willing to lend you. That is all triggered by good or medium or bad scores. What approves you is everybody's moving towards what's called automatic underwriting, Sam. And the issue is that in the old days, that of manual underwriting, they're looking at your financials, your taxes, your income, your W-2s. They need all these proof documents, right?
Right.
Well, they have found that, and that's called manual underwriting, full doc, no doc, or stated income, stated and unsecured lending uses automatic underwriting. So instead of using all these proof documents, they've been watching your behaviors. The FICO software, lender software watches the last 24 months of behaviors because those are predictive of the next 24 months.
Sure.
But they do it in increments of 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, and 24 months. So it's kind of exponential in nature, right? Every period has way more value than the previous period to prove whether you're going to be a good risk or a bad risk. Well, interestingly enough, those, it's called the 24-month look-back period, and there are 40 FICO behaviors. We call them borrower behaviors, 40 borrower behaviors that are measured, and that's what approves you. So when you do a simple thing like fill out an application online and you hit submit, and FICO is so proud that this happens like in 6 milliseconds, but they ping every database, not just three credit bureaus, but they're pinging the FICO Falcon fraud prevention system, what's called early warning services. They're looking at LexisNexis. They ping all these for your identity and matching payment data. They make a decision based on what your borrower behaviors have been for the last 3, 6, 12, and 24 months. And that's what determines your approval or denial.
Right, right. But how does someone craft their information such that it makes sense to FICO to get approved?
Yeah.
I mean, there's $1 million question.
$1 million question, right? And you get $1 million credit line if you know the answer. So there are a number. Let's take identity, for example, all right? Because that's one of the 40 borrower behaviors. When you walk into a bank and hand your driver's license to a loan officer, they know exactly who you are. They're looking at you square in the eye and they're like, okay, I know who this person is. And then they set up all their proof docs. That is not so when it comes to automatic underwriting, online submissions, and digital approvals, right? So what they're doing is they look at your identity that you put on your application. Does it or does it not match what's on the databases? Now, here's the problem. My name is Merrill Ray Chandler. Before I knew I was doing, I filed under Merrill Chandler, Merrill R. Chandler, Merrill Ray Chandler. So to an algorithm, that's three different borrowers. And your audience will get this like a dagger to the heart. Every single buy and hold will end up placing, depending on the bureau, will end up placing a new current address on your credit profile because you just bought a new home. So you may have multiple addresses, multiple versions of your name, and some people are plagued with wrong social security numbers or additional security numbers. Now, here's the thing. Your identity is the gateway to an approval. They will check to see who they're going to lend to long before they look at any of your payment history or other data points. So here's what's interesting. You have total power over what the lenders have and what the databases have. So this is one of 40 things, but you ask me, how do I do it? Well, when you know the rules of the game, you can change the information at each one of these databases to reflect your true identity. So now Merrill R. Chandler, nobody can. If somebody were to steal my driver's license and see Merrill Ray Chandler and do a fake application using Merrill Ray Chandler, it would be rejected because there's not a database in the financial system that has me as Merrill Ray anymore. And we teach our students and clients how to do that and how to make sure that the data that they're putting in their application is exactly what the databases are going to spit back out.
Right. And I wonder about even, so speaking of identity things, like I've owned, obviously a real estate investor, I've owned real estate all over the state of Tennessee. And I keep my driver's license not at the same address that I may be even living at now because, you know, well, back when we were really moving a lot, it was every 12, 17, 18 months I was moving. It's like, well, I'm just going to keep it here. Does things like that even matter?
Well, not as much as long as it doesn't matter between you and me. Shh, don't tell anybody. It doesn't matter as much what's on your driver's license. Unless you're disputing something, then you need matching data.
Right.
But if you're proactive, if you're not disputing something, then it's making sure that the correct information, the identity, what we call a personal borrower identity, a PBID,
yeah.
Your personal borrower identity is what's going to be recorded on all these databases everywhere.
Right.
Then when you file using your borrower identity, it matches perfectly. Doesn't matter what's on your driver's license.
Yeah, that's interesting. How about when you're buying an entity names and things like that? I mean, does that matter at all? I mean, because talk to us about that.
Yeah. So over on the business side now, there are what are called business identity codes, right?
Sure.
The technical terms are SIC, NAICS codes, right. But they're just think of them as business funding codes. And depending on your code, you're low, medium, or high risk by the very code you use. Real estate investors are a high risk code. So sure. If we were in the middle of my web class, I'd show a slide that shows anything that has to do with property, real estate, holdings, trust, any of those types of words, if it's in the business name or the business purpose, you could be Alpine Group, but if it's in the business purpose, here's what nobody gets or nobody realizes is that your Secretary of State actually codes you in their files by the name that using the SIC codes or NAICS codes, they code you. And then all that gets transferred over to Dun & Bradstreet, Experian Business, Equifax Business. And when a lender looks your business up and sees that name and or those codes, you're automatically on the blacklist, the gray list, and or the whitelist. And you don't even have a chance at getting. How many of your listeners have walked in and said they might have millions of dollars in transactions per year,
right.
But because they're a real estate investor, they can't get $100,000 unsecured business line of credit.
Right.
I change all of that.
I've been there. Been there. Yeah, absolutely. You're like, what?
There you go.
Like, this is ridiculous. Like, we've got the balance sheet. We've got the credit score. We've got the assets. And I've got the income. Why is this not working?
Because you're a high-risk industry.
What do you do? Just lie about it and change your industry?
Not at all. There's no lying.
Okay. And I meant that tongue-in-cheek, really. Obviously.
But the point is there are strategies out there. And I invite you and your listeners to come hear about these strategies because I want people to know that it doesn't have to be the way you're experiencing it. Most of my clients are real estate investors or entrepreneurs, right? And we all have that problem. We all have that exact same problem. Like, hold it. What do you mean I can't borrow money? I have $250,000 in cash in a savings account here, and you're not going to give me $100 in a credit line?
Yeah,
I don't understand. And it's because automatic underwriting is good news and bad news. Good news is that if you match the guidelines, it's an approval, guaranteed approval. If it doesn't match the guidelines, they're not going to look at you twice. They're like, oh, I'm sorry, you got a denial. Will you look at it? Well, no, if you put 14 houses up and a bunch of cash, maybe we'll think of it. Now you're over here in manual underwriting land, right? But your business is the first thing that's going to pull the rug out from underneath you, the business name and or business purpose.
Right. No, that's fascinating. Yeah. Okay. So we've got two things so far. The name of the business, you've got, which ties back to identity on both sides of that. That's one of the 40 behaviors that you see as kind of a major red flag. What else is out there that we should say, hey, you know, these are things. And again, I know obviously, you know, we can come to you and get this figured out. But what are some other things that?
I got plenty of them to share with your whole crew free of charge. So another one. So everybody says pay on time, right? pay on time. That's just been bred into us, pay on time.
I mean, it's just a good thing to do.
But what does pay on time actually mean? Somebody will come up to me at an event and they'll go like, I don't need you. I got an 800 plus credit score. And I go, so how did you get that 800 plus credit score? And they're like, I pay my bills on time. And I'm like, so what about the other 39 things that lenders look at? So here's the point. And some of your listeners are going to be like, what? This is crazy. Paying before the due date doesn't harm you, but you don't get the extra business and lending underwriter points for paying on the due date. Paying 2 days before, 3 days before, 4 days before, we all think we're being good borrowers, right? I'm just going to hook up my lender, take care of him. FICO measures fastidiousness. They're looking for predictive behavior. It's not predictive if you play 3 days before one day, one day before the next day, and a week before the day before. You think you're being a superhero of a borrower, right?
Yeah, sure.
And yet you're not getting negative accounts against you, but you're not getting everything that that particular account could deliver to you. Here's a perfect example, and I'm just using round numbers. A positive account can count 50 points for you or only 5 points for you based on all these things we're talking about. To you, it says paid is agreed, and you think, I'm a superhero. FICO's going, I'm going to give them 12 points for that one because of all these 40 reasons.
Right.
No, and so that's why somebody may have an 820 score and somebody else might have a 760 score, but everything still says paid is agreed on both of these different profiles.
That's fascinating. Yeah, I'm guilty as charged, man. It was, yesterday or the day before? I was looking at a credit card. And the balance isn't due, you know, I pay my cards every month, but it's not due until June 7th, right? Mm-hmm. I'm like, screw it. I don't really want to jack with this. It's like $2,800. Just pay the thing off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you're saying I would be better off letting it pay automatically
Put it on auto pay,
right?
And pay the entire statement balance, not the current balance. You don't want the current balance because now you're in a new billing cycle and we want to get counted positively for that billing cycle. You follow me?
I do, man. I thought I was a great borrower.
We all do. And then we're wondering why we're not fundable. We're like, and then there's the people who are like, I have an 820 credit score. Why won't anybody give me money? And I'm like, dude, because your score doesn't matter. It doesn't get you approved. The 40 borrower behaviors get you approved.
That's intriguing. I'm certainly intrigued. Yeah. Cause there's a lot of those behaviors that are ingrained.
Yeah.
You know, hey, pay early, pay on time, you know, do what you agreed to do. And I was thinking, no, this is great. You know, I've been doing that for probably since I've owned a credit card. Like, whatever, just pay it off. That way it goes away. And when the statement comes and it says, you know, maybe
zero balance
now until then, or it might have zero balance or maybe a couple $100, I feel better about it because I don't have to think about it. And it's like, it's done.
So you can still have the effortlessness, but you're just playing by the rules of the game. Every one of my clients, we teach them put on automatic, for those who can afford it, put on automatic payment of the statement balance, not current balance, statement balance on the due date, auto draft. And I want your listeners to do that for 3 months and then shout you out and say how much their credit scores have gone up just from that alone. Nothing else, just from that alone.
The predictability is worth more to them.
3 days of...
Yeah, or your repayment history.
That's correct.
Man, that's interesting. That's interesting.
Right?
Wow. All right.
This is my jam. This is why this stuff is like, I love this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I can tell. I can absolutely tell. Yeah, this is intriguing. All right. So give me one more nugget and then we got to jump here into the final four.
Sure. So another one. Oh, okay. Let's talk about let's go back to business. So let's talk about business addresses, kind of an identity thing, right? We talked about the name, but what is currently unfundable is if your business is at your residence address, meaning if you're applying and your business address and your personal address are the same address, you're either completely out of the game or they'll give you a baby test limit. Because in their world, remember, their world, you're not a legitimate business. I had a programmer who worked from home, had his consulting firm work at his home, doing $1 million a year in billables, and he could not qualify for credit until he went and got a virtual office and separated his personal, because that makes you a legitimate borrower out. Now, real estate investors usually don't office out, right?
Right.
But the question I ask is, so what's $1 million in business credit lines, unsecured stated income credit lines worth it to you? Is it worth $300 a year or $100 a month for a virtual office that they're willing to fund? Or would you rather be right than happy?
Right.
That's kind of my end game. So we have to have the right business address, and commercial addresses are less fundable. True fundability of true approvals come at virtual address and dedicated office or higher.
What about things like, you know, UPS boxes that have an actual physical address?
So I wish I could show you, but if you go to USPS.com, the United States Postal Service.com, and you go find a zip code and you put your commercial address in there, and you're thinking, I'm just going to use the address. But then you down below, there's a question that says mail receiving agency. And if there's a Y next to that for yes, then that makes you unfundable. And all the tier one and tier two lenders use that same database to search whether or not you're legit.
Right. So even USPS and or UPS boxes don't count.
Nope. You might on UPS boxes, the what we call commercial mailboxes, UPS and FedEx and mailbox, et cetera, those have smaller approvals. They're what we call test approvals. You'll get $5,000 instead of 30 or 50 because they want to legitimize. Because remember, fraud is the number one fear of loss that lenders have.
Sure.
And it's the number one source of loss. And the number one source of loss is from fake real people and fake addresses, IDs that they've stolen and then mail forwarded to a different box. And then a fraudster's using that box to do false applications.
Wow. Merrill, this has been intriguing. Love and excited to learn more from you on this. Let's jump here into the final four. First sure. question is this, and this is going to be, what is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
Know your numbers. What it costs to do every level of the business that you're in. Absolutely. Know your numbers.
That's awesome. Question number two is this. When it comes to investing in yourself, what is one thing you're doing to stay on top of your game?
Every single day, I read some business book that has been referred to me by someone who is doing better in business than I am.
Every day you read a book.
Oh, not a whole book. I read a chapter or out of a book every single day.
I was like, wow, I've been following guys doing 52 books in 52 weeks. And I'm like, holy smokes.
No. This is just something from the book. But the key is a book that is recommended by somebody who's doing better than I am in business.
That's awesome.
More revenues, bigger client load, et cetera.
Do you share your reading list?
I'm happy to.
That's awesome. Okay, cool. That's awesome. Question number three is this. When it comes to investing in the world, what is one way you're making the world a better place?
Well, what I do is a vocation more than a job. This is a mission-based educate borrowers. Is I do free, and besides low-cost boot camps, I do free presentations to disadvantaged neighborhoods, communities, and churches. What I know is life-changing and finance-changing and can propel people to realms they've never dreamed of. And so both personally, spiritually, emotionally, mentally, my calling is to get to this into the world so that people paid for or not, so that they can change their lives for the better.
Right, man, that's awesome. Merrill, how do our listeners get more in touch with you and learn more about your boot camps and all of that?
Absolutely. Get Fundable Boot Camp is the easiest way to find it. Just go read the reviews. I mean, the reviews themselves on this site makes my heart expand three sizes today, but it is humbling to know that knowing what I do actually has the power to change lives. And so go check it out. Read the reviews. It's $100 for a 16-hour boot camp live with me, Q&A, interactive, so that we can do exactly what you and I've been doing, but with a class of 50 to 100 people.
And that's awesome. That is awesome.
GetFundableBootCamp.com.
Look forward to it. GetFundableBootCamp.com. We'll stick that in the show notes. Merrill, thank you so much for coming on today. I do appreciate it.
Absolutely. Loves you. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen,
If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.